Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Breeze. My name is Andy, also known as Cyberhawks, a current student pilot, and we're going to pretty much be talking in this episode about what it's like to go through the process of becoming a student pilot, whether it's right for you, all those big questions, and all the fears that you might have of trying to learn to fly. A lot of the times, people doubt that they can even do it, and I think that's ridiculous, and we're going to go into why. We're going to specifically be doing that through the point of view of going through a discovery flight, because I think it's the best way to answer it, and I hope you enjoy. Also, if you want to send in any suggestions for any episodes, or if you have any questions that you'd like to ask me, feel free to email us at thebreeze@cyberhawksofficial.com. Let's get into it. All right, guys, I hope you liked that intro. That was actually something that was created by Harris Heller from his Streambeats Originals. It's actually technically owned, I believe, by Senpai Records. Harris Heller is a famous Twitch streamer. Well, I think he's famous anyway, because he's averaging about 1,500 viewers all the way down to 800 at the low point. And he decided he was really frustrated with the DMCA situation. I'm not getting paid at all, by the way, to mention them at all. But I just had to shout them out, because as a result of this streaming music and the license that they provide you, you can actually go to their website, download the audio and the license, and it'll guarantee that you're never going to get a DMCA strike as a result of using their music. It's great for anything with YouTube, Twitch, podcasts. It's entirely meant for content creation, and I think it's fantastic. I also just wanted to point out that you can go to his YouTube channel at Alpha Gaming on YouTube and learn about some tips about content creation, things like audio, you know, video production, anything like that. I feel like I have to pay it forward, since he did so much for me and all the knowledge that I gained from it. I gained it from other places as well, but that was probably my main hub for learning. So yeah, I guess with that out of the way, let's get right into the podcast. Okay, if you're like me, ever since you were 6 years old, or roughly around there, you probably looked up at the sky and thought, wow, how cool would it be to learn how to fly a plane? And it probably seemed pretty outlandish to you as you grew up, or maybe even at the time you were smart enough to realize, like, wow, that's a pretty complicated job. I don't know if it's going to be something I could do. And it just feels out of reach for you. Maybe you feel that way now, and you're just wondering, okay, is this actually possible? Is it too expensive? Is it too complicated? Maybe you're scared. Maybe you're worried that you're going to crash the plane or something crazy. Maybe you're actually scared of the dashboard and all the crazy amounts of dials that are across something like an Airbus. I'm here to tell you, you can totally overcome all of those fears. It's not something you have to fear, and you can totally get past them as long as you go take it step by step and be honest with yourself about how far you're progressing. The reason that I bring up the progression note is it's really important to figure out exactly where you are with anything that you learn. Like, let's think back to, you know, high school, middle school, university, any of it, and you're taking something like a math course. If you're sitting there inside of the math course and you're realizing you're really far behind and you need to do better, you don't know what to do, you're frustrated, and you realize, okay, maybe I should meet after school with the instructor or the TA, whatever it might be, and I need to figure out exactly how to progress to the point where I'm caught up. Or maybe you're really far ahead and you realize, okay, great, I can use this to my advantage and actually talk more with the instructor and get further ahead, so that if I have any questions along the way, I can actually backtrack, look at the issue, and then fix it before it really matters with any of my grades. The same thing applies with flight. If you're actually learning to fly, it's really important to figure out, okay, I'm really good at, you know, taxiing. I'm good at learning about all the stuff about the airport. I'm really bad, though, at actually flying the plane, and I need to figure out why that is. Maybe I'm scared. Maybe this is too complicated when it comes to this type of maneuver and all that stuff. It's really vital. Now, one of the best ways to make sure that you're actually paying attention to your progression is to get an instructor that's going to help point it out to you and that's going to be completely honest with you. If you have an instructor that's not being honest with you, you should probably back away and just realize, not a good idea. This person's not going to help me in terms of my instruction, all that good stuff. How they deliver it obviously is up to you. If you need an instructor that's super kind, super friendly, you know, like super, like, easy to talk to and is still going to be honest and, like, help you progress, that's great. If you're like me, you might need somebody who's a little bit more aggressive and is telling you, like, hey, what are you doing and stuff like that, so that you feel a little bit more motivated. It's always up to the person. There's plenty of different types of instructors. I just think it's pretty vital. Now, The question, of course, that's probably going through your mind is, how do I find an instructor that's going to do that for me? And the answer is simple. Discovery flight, discovery flight, discovery flight. You knew it. I warned you. It's going to be a lot about discovery flights throughout this entire podcast. And the reason is it's going to answer these questions. A discovery flight, in essence, is when you go to a flight school and you pay about $100 for an hour. That's pretty typical, at least within the United States. And you go up and you just learn how to fly on the basics. You do, you know, rolls, banks, all that stuff. And sometimes they even let you take off out of the airport if they feel confident in you, which is super great. And you'll be able to figure out pretty quickly, okay, this instructor is a great fit for me. They're going to tell me I'm doing something wrong. And they're also going to be kind about it. Or maybe they need to be harsh, depending on what your teaching style typically needs to be when you're learning something. It's fantastic. And on the same note, you're also going to figure out a whole lot more information, which we'll get into. But one of the biggest things is, does flying fit for you? Now, if it's just the instructor and the instructor is really up in your face and is someone that's absolutely awful to fly with or really grumpy, you know, don't take that to heart. That's not all flying. I mean, for the most part, I would say most instructors are fantastic. I genuinely believe the aviation community is probably one of the best on the planet. But it's super great because you're actually going to be able to go up there and find what's right for you in terms of that teaching style. Finding that right teaching style for you is so vital. I can't really understate it. It's one of those things where you need somebody who's pretty much just going to tell you straight off the bat, yeah, you screwed up here. You did this super fantastic. This really needs a lot of work. You know, any of that stuff. They're going to go through that spectrum and be honest with you. That delivery, of course, can vary. As I was saying, you might want somebody who's harsh or you might want somebody who's nice, but you want somebody who's not going to lie to you. If you can tell that they're, you know, kind of spitting BS at you just because they want you to sign up for the flight school, I would run away. And I do mean that. Unless you think that's just the one instructor, you could always go for a second discovery flight with someone else. But for the most part, I would definitely have your BS radar, as it's called, up and running just to make sure that you can say, yeah, this person's not being honest with me. They're not going to teach me right. The flight school's more interested in, you know, money, which, you know, of course they have to worry about, but they're worried more about that than actually making me a proficient pilot. That's something that really should freak you out if you have that experience. Okay, so another thing that I would really worry about if I were you is, okay, is this person really, really booked? Like, are they so booked that I'm going to get maybe, you know, an hour in a week with this person? Am I going to have to book over a month in advance just to make sure I actually get any flight time with this person? If that's the case, you should definitely run away. You know, whatever that looks like is going to depend on your schedule and what you're willing to do. It's not going to be the same for anybody. It's always going to go, you know, up or down depending on what you're doing. But on top of it, you're really going to have to really look at, right, all right, this person has enough time to sit down with me right before a flight and say, you know, let's quiz you a little bit on your ground school stuff because, you know, you might be lacking a little bit when it comes to what taxiway signs look like. And maybe you need to figure out your communications with ATC a little bit better. Maybe you need to work on your weather data, you know, intake, so to speak, with METAR, which don't worry about. But I mean, like, that's just something that you really need to figure out is, okay, do they have time to talk to me about these complex things? Or do they not have time to actually meet with me? Are they going to be so booked that I'm not going to see them for over a month? Am I, you know, going to only see them once a week for an hour or something like that? And if that's the case, run away. It's not worth doing at all. It's a huge pain in the butt. It's super frustrating. I just don't think it's worth your time at all. Now, obviously, you're going to have to give a little bit of give and take for these flight schools. Now, depending on where you are, you might have a flight school that's so small and there's only so many around you that you can only go with so many instructors, or there's only so many aircraft and all that stuff. If that's the case, then you might have to, one, either consider driving further away to a better flight school situation, or two, if that's not an option for you, you know, just be willing to try and find another instructor that's, you know, good for your fit, still gets everything done, isn't a huge, you know, pain in your butt, so to speak, and is going to actually solve all of the questions that you have in your mind about, okay, is this a good instructor? Do they fit the things that we're talking about right now? All that good stuff. But just don't feel too discouraged. Just make sure to give a little bit of care and consideration in the fact that some of them may be busy. It's just, you have to work within still an expected parameter. And if there's just nobody there that's going to do that, it's not worth your time. Okay, so now that we got the proficiency part out of the way, let's talk a little bit about discovering whether or not flying is meant for you. This is something that discovery flights are super fantastic for. They're also kind of a really great reason why they exist in the first place. But when you go and take a discovery flight, one of the things that your flight instructor will likely do is they'll tell you, okay, I want you to go on to taxiway Alpha, Bravo, whatever it is, and I want you to go follow this route, steer where I tell you to steer, and get to the point of holding short of the runway. This is going to feel a little overwhelming when you do it, because prior to that, they'll probably go through a checklist and showing you everything about the plane and, like, you know, giving you some information about what you would check if you were doing flights and stuff to make sure it was safe. But on top of it, you're not going to be steering with the yoke, which everyone who I've ever seen who's been driving their whole life and doesn't know anything about flying, they're going to grab the yoke and try and turn it. That doesn't work. You push on the rudder pedals with your left or right feet or foot. And when you do that, you're actually going to move the nose of the aircraft towards where it needs to go. And you're going to try and center it up on a yellow line that's on the taxiway. Taxiways, by the way, are simply just strips of asphalt that get you from point A to point B throughout the airport. And they're really useful when you're trying to get from, you know, a parking spot all the way down to, like, pretty much holding short of the runway. Now, depending on how comfortable the instructor is with you, you might actually be holding short of the runway at this point, and they might tell you, like, hey, I want you to talk to air traffic control. I want you to say X, Y, and Z, and I want you to wait for clearance. And if you get clearance, just tell them yes, and make sure to look out the left window and the right window, make sure there's no traffic, all that good stuff. Now, if this is overwhelming for you and you have a brain fart, which, by the way, don't feel bad, that totally happens at the beginning. I definitely experienced that. You're probably going to just want to tell them, like, hey, I'm not comfortable with doing communications right now. I'd rather, you know, just go through the basics and just kind of focus on that. And they'll typically be really kind to you. If they're not, I would be worried about the instructor, but that's another discussion. And after you get clearance, they'll have you roll out onto the runway. Once you roll out onto the runway, you'll probably have a moment where they're going to tell you, like, okay, now that we're lined up, I want you to keep the aircraft centered as we go down it by pushing on the left or right rudder pedal, and I want you to advance the throttle. And I want you to do it by pushing in this stick that has a black cap on the end, if it's a Cessna anyway. This is pretty typical for most people. And I want you to push it until you get to a certain RPM, which you're going to look at on your dashboard. Then at that point, once we hit a certain speed, which is going to be on another, you know, dot or gauge inside of the actual dashboard, you're going to pull back, or they might say rotate, you're going to pull back on the yoke, and you're going to try and line up the actual dashboard at this point on the aircraft, which is typically like a little nub on a Cessna. It's really easy to look at. At that point, you will be taking the aircraft off the ground and out of the airport and trying to fly straight until they tell you to turn. This is really normal. It might sound scary to you since you're thinking, wow, I'm having to do a dangerous act right off the bat. But don't worry about it. If you're not comfortable, you can always tell them. I personally recommend it because it's a really thrilling experience to be the person to get yourself off the ground. After that, you'll probably do some banks and rolls throughout your entire discovery flight. You might be told, like, hey, where do you want to fly over? Like, is there somewhere you want to go check out? And you could say, like, yeah, I'd really like to fly over my house. It's over at so-and-so in this town. Or I'd really like to fly over my gym. I'd really like to fly over my university. I'd really like to fly over, you know, whatever it is. And they'll go do that for you, which is super great. And if you want to do that and they don't give you the option, just ask them to. A lot of times they'll probably be willing to do it as long as it's not too far out of the way in terms of the time allotted that you're given for your discovery flight. They'll be willing to do it because it's going to get you more engaged and more interested in what you're doing. It's really fun too, because in that moment, you're going to determine, like, all right, does this sensation really make a lot of sense to me? Do I really love this concept of being able to fly right over my house, to fly in any direction, at least within a certain elevation? We'll get into that in a different podcast. But am I actually going to enjoy this sense of freedom and this sense of responsibility of taking this aircraft off the ground? Most of the time, I'm going to say you're probably going to get thrilled. I haven't really met anyone that has hated it, including people who hate flying that don't like piloting an aircraft. If you do like it, flying is more than likely for you. If you don't like it, that's totally okay. It's not your thing. Don't worry about it. Something really cool too is if you do this a number of times, they'll probably have you do different maneuvers depending on what school you're at and you telling them, like, hey, I've flown such and such amount of hours already, and you have like a flight logbook hopefully at this point. We'll go into that after we talk about this. But if you do it enough times, you're probably going to say, yeah, like, I've flown 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, and like, I've gone to this many schools and this is what I've done every time. And if they feel really comfortable with you and they see that that's signed off inside of a, you know, flight logbook, they'll probably have you do something crazy. I had an instructor, for instance, that actually had me do stalls and all that stuff. And it was really interesting because I got to do it really early inside of my flight training. And I learned so much right out of the gate because of it. this is all up to you and your progression, obviously, but I think Discovery Flights are great just for that reason alone. And plus, the more that you actually tack it on for each school that you check out, each instructor and all that stuff into your logbook, the more it counts actually for towards your FAA requirements of actually getting your private pilot's license. And ironically, you'll be learning while you do it. You just didn't realize it. So that should get into the point of if flying is really made for you right off the bat. There are some more complicated things that'll come in at a later point, but the biggest thing other than the actual experience that I think you really need to focus on when it comes to flying is, are you willing to do the work and go through the difficulties of learning all the ground training, all the flight training, all the theory behind it? And is it interesting enough for you that you're going to put in all of your work and actually be a safe pilot? If you know yourself at this point and you've done it that many times and you just realize you're not going to put enough effort in, I would not continue. It's not worth being an unsafe pilot. It's much more worth it to actually pay attention, do the right things, and do everything you can to be proficient. Okay, now let's get into another fear that a lot of people have, which is you're looking at the dashboard of any aircraft. Like maybe right now you're listening to this podcast. If you have a free window open right now, you know, pop it open with Safari, Chrome, whatever you use, and just type in Airbus cockpit. And if you look at that in the images section and it's terrifying you, that's natural. That's actually good, if anything, because it means you take it seriously. And I'm glad that you have that reaction. Now, if you want to figure out, like, okay, is it going to be complicated from the very get-go? Am I going to be terrified the entire way through my learning process? The answer is no. And the reason is you're going to start with something called a Cessna, more than likely. So I want you to type in the Cessna 172 cockpit. You don't obviously don't include the, but when you look up that aircraft in terms of images and you look at the actual cockpit, you'll realize it's way more simple. There's still some dials that probably confuse the crap out of you. There's some gauges that probably don't make any sense. Like I bet the VOR one, you're like, what the heck is that? But you'll recognize other ones like, you know, speed and RPMs and all that stuff. That'll all look really familiar. Or, you know, fuel gauge. That's great. It's just like a car. It's just that different planes have different mechanics in order to operate. So a jet is way more complicated than something with a propeller, for instance, or a Cessna is going to be a lot more complicated with all its automated features than something like an Airbus. Like it just really depends on what you're flying. So don't freak out and just realize that you're going to get to a point where you're going to be able to learn how to fly something like an Airbus if you want to become an airline pilot and you go through the process. Speaking of which, if you're at this point inside of, you know, your podcast listening experience and you're thinking, well, this is all private pilot stuff. I really want to be an airline pilot. Don't worry. I really just am focused on this because this is my experience because I want to be a private pilot at the moment. But if down the road I want to become a commercial pilot, I know I'm going to be extremely proficient. However, if you do want to find a good school and you're going to be an airline pilot, try and do something like an ATP license through an ATP school, because if you go through that, you're actually going to spend a lot less money. They're really good at fast tracking and you might even get a scholarship, which probably would help you a lot. Also, that cockpit, you want to pay attention to. You want to make sure that when you are inside of an aircraft and you're, you know, getting scared, perhaps, and you're sitting there the first time you're in that seat, looking around thinking, what the heck did I get myself into? See if the cockpit is relatively well maintained. And don't worry if it's old. That's really normal for something like a Cessna. A lot of planes are pretty ancient feeling, just because the aesthetics are old, but they replace the engines constantly just due to FAA regulations and all that stuff. I wouldn't worry too much about the maintenance and all that stuff. Now, if it's a real beater and you're noticing flat spots on the tires like everywhere, or there's like weird things in the wings that look unsafe, yeah, you should probably go somewhere else. I've never experienced that because the FAA is so critical on that stuff. But if you do experience that, run for the hills, obviously. But just keep that in mind. This also brings me to another point that you really should be paying attention to, which is if you're looking at the flight school during your discovery flight, probably come in about an hour early and say, hey, I want to tour the facility and the aircraft and what all options I have to me. So maybe you're thinking, I want to have a low wing right off the bat. I don't want to have a high wing. So a Cessna is a high wing where the wings are actually above the cockpit, and a low wing is something like a Piper, or certain Pipers anyway, and it's going to be below your cockpit and you're going to have to like climb over the wing in order to get into the cockpit. But when you look at that, you're going to see each aircraft, and I want you to pay attention to whether or not they're taking you directly only and only to the best types of aircraft in terms of the best condition. If you see one that's a beater in the background, ask them to show you the aircraft, and they're probably going to resist. All flight schools do this. This is normal. Now, how much they resist is different. One thing I would tell them straight up, and I'd just be honest, is be like, I want to know exactly what your maintenance is like for all of your aircraft. And I want to figure out if you take care of them, even at the low end. And if they're not willing to do that for you, walk out. They need to be willing to understand that you need to look at aircraft and determine, are they safe for one? And two, are they going to be in maintenance all the time because they're so beaten up? There's obviously going to be some wear and tear on aircraft. If there's none, that's a little strange. It's probably going to be an expensive school, actually, because a lot of pilots, when they're learning how to fly, are going to land rough. They're, you know, going to fly in a way that's going to make some things like, you know, screw up the paint job just a little bit or something like that. You might notice a couple of flat spots on your tires that aren't too crazy, but if they're crazy, obviously it's a bad plane. But maintenance is a huge deal. The more that the plane is out of commission, the more that you're not going to be able to fly, and the more that you're going to have to wait for your aircraft in order to get back up. And the more that that time passes, the more that you're going to be sitting on the ground forgetting what you learned last time you went up, and the more that you're going to have to fly over and over and over again, spending more money and more hours trying to relearn what you already did. It's not worth it. Don't mess with it. Just try and make sure you get a place that actually well maintains their aircraft and has enough time for you to actually schedule in a consistent basis. Okay, and now for the last section, when it comes to the actual discovery flight process, one thing that I would want you to look at is, what does the facility offer for you? Are they completely focused on flight training? If so, that's totally fine. You need to just figure out a ground school. Or are they also entirely focused on ground school? And if that's the case, maybe you should look elsewhere just because you don't know how expensive their instructors are on the ground. You're gonna have to like kind of do a him and haw and figure out what's right for you. Personally, I still stick by the concept of, you know, going online and looking for a ground school and then coming in and doing your flight training because you're going to reduce that cost. A lot of flight schools cost about, I don't know, like $400 or $500, depending on how much, you know, material they provide, how detailed they are, all that stuff. There's obviously a minimum requirement for them, but I would try and spend more money and get a lot more decent material, something like King Schools or, you know, Fly8, Mike Alpha, they all offer really decent instruction. There's also Sporties. I haven't used Sporties, but if you can, look for some kind of online ground school that's going to focus in on that material and then go into that flight school and find someone who's willing to say, okay, I'm going to quiz you on your ground knowledge because that's important to me as an instructor because I have to sign off and endorse you for your test, essentially, in order to become an actual private pilot. But also, is willing to like give you time more in the air so that you can actually spend that time getting proficient in that area instead of just burning money on instructor costs. If they're not willing to do that, it's a little suspicious. I don't know if it's like the end of the world per se, but it's something I would worry about for sure. Okay, so now that we've actually talked a lot about really the discovery flight process and what that's like, I kind of want you guys to sit there and inside of your car before each one, have a notebook and just write down things you liked about the flight school, things you liked about the flight instructor, things that you liked about flying, and just making sure that these all make sense to you and it really does feel like something that you want to do. Especially because if you actually keep track of all these things, you're going to be able to make a good decision if you do decide to go down this path of learning to fly, and it's going to help you a lot down the road. Now, obviously, you probably shouldn't bring in this notebook and like a pencil and like write it the whole time while you're going through your discovery flight, because one, you're not going to be able to focus on the experience, and two, you're also just not going to be able to sit there and have the instructor feel really comfortable if you're acting like a reporter just recording the entire thing. Instead, just do it right after, especially because if you do it right after, you can remember all the emotions you had and just say like, hey, I was really frustrated actually, or I was really excited and I had a blast and I felt like I was learning a lot of good things. Those are really important. Just make sure that you are learning and not just having fun chatting it up with a really nice instructor and that you actually realize this is going to be something good for you down the road. The next material that I think is super vital is I really believe you need to get a flight log, regardless as to if you're going to fly or not, right off the bat, because each discovery flight is actually recordable, at least according to the FAA when I started. I don't know if it still is. I'm not a CFI, obviously, so I wouldn't know. But at the time when I started doing this, you could actually record the discovery flights inside of your logbook, and they could count theoretically towards your entire requirement for the 40 hours for becoming an actual private pilot. This was super awesome because, you know, every single time that you're testing this out, you're actually getting closer to that goal, and that money's not entirely wasted. It actually went somewhere. Now, if you still have to do 40 hours, it's, you know, kind of a bummer, but if you want to go to commercial, that's just another step closer to becoming, you know, closer to that massive goal of so many hours just in order to actually be able to fly for some kind of commercial use. In addition, it's also really helpful for any endorsements you may need or anything like that, or just so that an instructor gets a viewpoint of like where you've been inside of your career, and seeing that you really try to get the basics over and over and over again, you kind of got a really good start that was hammered into your head over and over and over again. With that out of the way, I guess I'm going to kind of transition a little bit more into what my story was like, just so that you guys can kind of experience my sensations. Maybe it's relatable to you, or maybe you can get an idea and see some of the mistakes that I felt like I made when going into this process and some things I wish I had done better. So when I actually first started, I was taking flight lessons over in Texas because it was near the university I was at the time. And I had to drive about 45 minutes away. Instead of looking at a whole bunch of flight schools, I just kind of went with the one that seemed to be the most reputable according to ratings, which really didn't help at the end of it, to be completely frank. Sure, some of it did help in the sense of like, yeah, they hit on all the notes per se, but the instructor I had was pretty aggressive at points. Some of it was really great and really helpful because I need some of that, but it was a little bit too much on the far end for me to actually learn anything of use. Instead, I was pretty much stressed out the entire time. That said, I did learn quite a bit, and when I actually went back to Colorado, because I transferred schools realizing that I wanted a job in Colorado when I was done, I started talking to a few different instructors at different schools, and one of the schools was actually in Centennial, Colorado, which Centennial, Colorado is a well-known airport location, just because the airport's pretty busy. It actually gets some of the Air Force, I believe, from Colorado Springs to come up and, you know, kind of touch base there and like do a loop and kind of come back. That's my assumption anyway, but they interact with them a lot, at least in the tower. And I remember sitting there on the ground burning about 30 minutes of fuel just waiting to get back up in the air. And sure, we still had some time up in the Discovery flight because they were willing to extend it, but it really bummed me out because it made me realize that a lot of my money was going to be wasted waiting to get off the ground and actually into the air. And on top of it, I realized that, you know, it was an expensive school. It was more expensive than some of the other ones in the area. And they were also really focused on digital screens, which sure, digital screens are great, but I wanted to focus on the steam gauge, you know, old school elements, so that if any of those actually failed, I knew I'd be able to do that right off the bat. Now, I feel like that's not super necessary, but I feel like it's a good idea in the sense of, you know, being prepared for the worst case scenario right from the get-go. So eventually, I actually tried out several other schools, eventually landing on one inside of Rocky Mountain Metropolitan, which was thanks to that friend that my mom knew that was working for United. And while talking to him, he said, like, hey, they focus on steam gauge aircraft. They're really friendly. They also get a lot of things done. You'll get up in the air in about no time flat, like maybe 15, 20 minutes. It's a little bit of a cut down, and they're not super expensive. So I went and checked them out. They had decent aircraft. They had decent equipment just in all regards. The instructors were proficient, and they were able to find something that fit me, which was perfect for what I wanted to do. In that process, I actually ended up discovering pretty quickly that it was worth it to bump around and look at different things, which I had heard from other people, but didn't really take to heart because it kind of just seemed like, you know, not that common of a piece of knowledge that was passed on to me. That said, looking back, absolutely a mistake. You guys should absolutely be checking out all the different flight schools in your area as much as possible, at least within your budget. Now, getting to budget, this is another sidetrack note that I think you should note when you're getting into flying, which is that it's going to be expensive. One of the biggest hurdles that I've had to face is that being in college and also not having a job. Like, I've had some jobs in between, but they're not very long lasting, sadly, because I have to focus on school. And the total cost of flying is about $10,000, if I'm honest, to get your private pilot's license for the first step. It's a lot more if you want to go further. And that's based on an average. And I feel like they say 40 hours is the minimum requirement for you to become a private pilot, but realistically, it's more like 60. And when you actually do that, you're going to be burning money all the time. And if you run out of cash for your time period, you're going to have to pretty much come back and say like, okay, well, I lost some knowledge theoretically because I don't quite remember how to do this. It's been a couple of weeks and it just kind of comes out of your head way faster than you expected. Whereas if you hit it over and over and over again, you're going to be able to retain that knowledge a lot better, and you're going to be able to really make sure that you're always on your game. So at least once a week is a minimum for me, I feel like. Two a week is a really good medium ground, and if you can go even more than that, that's even better. Obviously, you have to balance that with work and school and all that stuff. It just depends on your situation, but try and save up that money at least halfway, if not more, before starting, because it'll really help you out. On top of it, just make sure that you are cost managing as well. So for ground school, when I was going through it, I was actually just having the instructor teach me. And looking back, I eventually went online and tried different schools and found some that were really great and were doing honestly better than some of my instructors because they were so detailed with all the elements that I had to focus on. As a result, when I went in, all the theory and all the actual knowledge about the airport or like flying itself and all that stuff really came into play, and it made it way easier to fly as a result. And I spent less money with my instructor every hour. And as a result, I was saving more money. So if you can, try and get a flight school that allows you to do that, where you can get a ground school course online for maybe about $500 or less. There are some that are less and actually are pretty decent. Just go on there and just try and find something that really fits for you. Pop in, work with that flight instructor specifically on flight. Let them quiz you. In fact, ask them to. And then go up inside of the plane and focus on that. There's just a lot of mistakes that really come into play if you're not paying attention to these kinds of things. Now, when it comes to myself and I look back, I definitely can say I was scared at points. For instance, when I was on my third Discovery flight and I did those stall maneuvers, it was definitely freaky. It's not exactly a normal human feeling to be like falling out of the sky and thinking, yeah, that's on purpose. We're doing this so that I know what to do if this ever happens. But eventually I did overcome it because I essentially focused on the fact that if I trained hard enough and I focused hard enough and I was caring about my instructor's, you know, mentionings and all of his, you know, advice, as well as all the information that I was getting from ground school and a whole lot more, I was going to be safe. I wasn't going to be too stupid. That said, I also recognized that fear was important, because if I didn't have any fear, it could lead to a reckless action, which is something you really don't want to do when it comes to flying. You obviously want to be conscious of the dangers of flying. You want to be conscious of the dangers of not paying attention to other air traffic, for instance, in your area, the fear of actually possibly falling out of the sky in the first place. Any of those things you really need to pay attention to, but you want to make sure it's not so scary that you paralyze yourself. Thankfully, I've never really had that, but if that's something that you have, you do have to overcome it, and it's something that I would say is pretty vital. So, balance is everything when it comes to flight. Just as a long lesson looking back, it comes to balancing your budget, balancing advice when it comes to instructors and the types of advice they give, balancing that alongside with your emotions and making sure that you're rational and making good decisions, balancing that on top of the fact that you have to be passionate about flying, but not so much so that it becomes all-consuming and taking over your life to a point where you can't focus on anything else. There's a lot of different things that you really have to think about. It just comes down to really what you're into and if you're willing to do it. So did this episode answer your questions when it comes to learning how to fly? Do you feel like you're still stuck? Do you feel like you have some more questions when it comes to the beginning of it anyway? Or do you have some suggestions for a future episode? If so, feel free to email me at thebreeze@cyberhawksofficial.com. In addition to that, I just want to say that you can always check me out on Twitch at twitch.tv/cyberhawks. You can also check me out on youtube.com and just type in cyberhawks. You'll eventually find it. It's a kind of blue and white logo. You'll see it. There's a lot of cyberhawks out there apparently. But I hope that this answered everything that you guys need. I hope that you are enjoying this podcast. If you have any feedback, anything like that, feel free to email that to me as well. And with that, fly high, stay safe, and thanks for listening.